Welcome and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question and answer session, please press star one on your phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I'll turn today's meeting to Michael Herndon. You may begin.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Mike Herndon with FDA's Media Relations staff. Thanks and welcome to this briefing on the Salmonella investigation. We have speakers today from the Food and Drug Administration and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. We also have several FDA officials here to answer any questions later on in this briefing. Our two speakers this afternoon are Dr. David Acheson, Associate Commissioner for Foods with the FDA, and Dr. Robert Toke, Deputy Director, Division of Foodborne, Bacterial, and Mycotic Diseases with CDC. Our subject matter experts today are Ms. Melinda Plaisier, Associate Commissioner, Office of International Programs, Dr. Stephen Sunloff, Director, Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition, and Dr. Stephen Solomon, Deputy Director, Office of Regional Operations. We'll have a brief question and answer segment after the opening remarks, but at this time I'd like to turn it over to Dr. David Acheson.
Thank you, Mike. This is David Acheson, Associate Commissioner for Foods at FDA. I first would like to welcome you all to this call. I apologize that we're a few minutes late getting started, but I know there were a lot of people trying to dial in at the top of the hour. We'll follow our usual format, asking Dr. Toke from CDC to give his update and then come back to FDA and I'll provide you with our update. So, Dr. Toke.
Yes, thank you very much, David, and good afternoon to everybody. This large salmonella outbreak is continuing. The case count today is 1,220 reported cases from 42 states, the District of Columbia, and Canada, with at least 224 persons hospitalized. The latest reported date that an illness began is July 4th. The outbreak appears to be ongoing, as I said, with 20 to 30 new cases being reported each day. However, if we look at the number of persons who became ill each day, and if we look at that day by day, we can see that there was a decrease in the intensity of the outbreak that began in mid-June. We will shortly be putting a graph on our website that shows the number of people that became ill day by day. And this number began to increase as the outbreak began in early May. It reached a plateau from May 20th through June 10th, and during that time, about 33 persons reported that they became ill each day. From the period June 11th through June 20th, about 19 persons became ill each day, which is a decrease from the earlier higher plateau. It's difficult to interpret the days that are more recent than June 20th because there is an inherent delay in reporting, and that reporting delay means that people who really became ill a week or two ago have simply not been reported yet. However, I would say that although it appears that the outbreak is ongoing and we do not have evidence that it's over, it does appear to have decreased in intensity beginning in mid-June. Let me turn it back to you, Dr. Acheson.
Thank you very much. This is David Acheson again at FDA. Today, FDA wants to alert consumers that we are removing the tomato warning. As of today, FDA officials believe that consumers may now enjoy all types of fresh tomatoes available on the domestic market without concern of becoming infected with Salmonella St. Paul bacteria. FDA is removing this warning, which has been in place since June 7th, stating that consumers should avoid certain types of fresh tomatoes due to a possible contamination to the Salmonella St. Paul outbreak, and we'll be updating our website later today to reflect that. Second important point with regard to peppers. While we are changing our consumer guidance on tomatoes, we do reiterate the current consumer guidance with regard to vulnerable populations, i.e. the elderly, young children, immune compromised, that they should continue to avoid eating both jalapeno and serrano peppers as this investigation continues. obviously a key question of why this action with regard to changing consumer advice around tomatoes and why now. And it speaks to the evolution of the investigation as we continue to gather information, science, evaluate it. And as part of that process, we have determined a couple of important points as of today. Essentially, the farms producing the tomatoes identified through the epidemiology and tracebacks that we've been talking about over the last few weeks, during that investigation, that those farms are no longer shipping product. Obviously, as you're aware, this outbreak has been going on for quite some time, and the farms that have been implicated through our tracebacks are no longer shipping tomatoes. Second point is the testing of various critical points of this tomato supply chain, which again we have talked about before in terms of looking at those points in the supply chain where all these tomatoes flow through and may have been points at which they could have got contaminated, which includes the farms that have been identified through these tracebacks and the distribution in the packing warehouses. We found no evidence of contamination with Salmonella St. Paul, the outbreak strain, during those investigations. If we think of the time frame here, while the first case control study that was conducted by CDC in the States at the beginning of this outbreak did very clearly indicate a strong association between the consumption of certain types of fresh tomatoes and illness caused by the Salmonella St. Paul, as I said already, it's highly unlikely that any of those fresh tomatoes which were on the market at the onset of this outbreak, bearing in mind that goes back to mid-April, that any of those fresh tomatoes are currently on the market in any form. In addition, as I've already said, the farms in Florida and Mexico, which as you all know were the focus of our investigations, are no longer producing the tomatoes, and we've had no positive cultures for Salmonella St. Paul from any of these farms. So it's a combination of events that have come together through the analysis of the science regarding the timing, the inspectional data, the sampling data, that has led to this change in consumer advice. In terms of the current focus of our investigation, as you've heard from Dr. Tubbs, this outbreak is ongoing, although there are certainly some encouraging signs that it may be slowing down a little bit. FDA is not relaxing at all, even though maybe the outbreak is beginning to wane a little bit. But our focus is continuing on jalapeno and serrano peppers. And in conjunction with state and regulatory counterparts, we are continuing to conduct a nationwide surveillance looking for these peppers that may be contaminated with Salmonella St. Paul. As with the tomato assignments that we did previously, we are focusing on areas of interest, specifically import examinations and sampling and domestic inspections and sampling, and any retail surveillance. So we are following the same type track that we did with tomatoes through the tracebacks of identifying those critical points in the supply chain that we believe it's important to visit, inspect, sample if necessary, both domestically in the United States as well as regards to import. One final point is that in collaboration with Mexican officials, FDA has dispatched a team to Mexico to undertake an investigation of a specific farm in Mexico, because the traceback, at least at this point, has that farm in the train of the traceback. That does not mean, and I do not want to imply, that that farm is the source of this problem. But as with tomatoes, we're looking at all points on the supply chain, which are critical, where we believe there's a reasonable likelihood that the contamination could have occurred. So we're getting out to all the places at the same time. With that, that's the end of the specific points that I wanted to make. I think the key point here is that we are lifting the tomato warning, and we believe that consumers can now enjoy all types of fresh tomatoes that are available on the domestic market in the United States. With that, I hand it back to Mike Herndon.
Thank you, Dr. Atchison. At this time, ladies and gentlemen, we'll take your questions, and as always, fair to everyone. Please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up, and please state your name and affiliation. Operator will take the first question.
Thank you. We'll begin the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, press star 1, and please say your name and your affiliation when prompted. To withdraw a question, you can press star 2. Okay, one moment, and I'll bring up our first question. And our first question comes from Miriam Falco with CNN. Miriam, you may ask your question.
Hi. Thank you for taking the questions. I just want to be clear. You're not absolving or saying tomatoes never were the cause. You're just saying there's no fresh tomatoes available anymore that could be linked to the Salmonella St. Paul outbreak. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah, this is David Ashton. That is correct.
And you were very specific. You said you found no evidence of Salmonella St. Paul at the farms that you were at. Did you find evidence of anything, any other contaminants?
That's part of an ongoing investigation. The reason that the investigators went down there was to look if there's any evidence of the outbreak strain on there, and we did not find that. The investigators have come back. We're looking at the reports that they are putting together, and we will be working with the Mexican government to address any concerns that may come out of that.
But the obvious question is, you have still no idea what caused the contamination that led to the 1,220 illnesses that are reported so far.
We still do not know where the original contamination point was, and we're pursuing that as hard today as we were at the beginning.
Thank you. Thanks, Mary. Next question, please.
Our next question comes from David Mitchell with the Packer.
Hi. You said that consumers can go ahead and eat domestic tomatoes. Are you still investigating Sinaloa and Jalisco in Mexico? Are those areas going to be cleared at some point?
Let me clarify. When I said domestic tomatoes, I mean the tomatoes that are currently available in the United States, irrespective of where they come from.
Are there still Mexican states that... I think there's still two states that haven't been cleared. What is their status?
Well, I repeat, any tomatoes that are coming onto the market in the United States, where irrespective of where they come from, we no longer have concerns around them. You're alluding to the point of the exclusion list that we have. Mm-hmm. There is now no need to maintain that list. It was placed for specific reasons. With this new announcement, that list will go away.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, David. Next question, please.
Next question, Justin Bloom with Bloomberg News.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Dr. Acheson, I'm just wondering, with tomatoes, are you done with all the traceback work, or are you still tracing back tomatoes? And the farm you're talking about in Mexico, is that a farm that did tomatoes or only jalapenos?
Thanks, this is David Acheson. All of the tomato tracebacks that we have done have indicated, following back, doing the testing, that there's no current concerns, which is why we've changed the consumer advice. Obviously, this outbreak is ongoing. If we get a lead or a suggestion or some new indication that tomatoes need to be reexamined, we'll certainly do that. But right now, we don't have any concerns with regard to tomatoes. Let me clarify. I said farm. I probably should have been more specific. It is actually a packer. It is not a specific farm. It's a packer which receives tomatoes. I'm sorry. Excuse me. It receives peppers from a number of farms. Let me clarify. It's not a specific farm. I do not believe that they grow tomatoes, and if they do, it is not our focus of interest.
Okay, and if I could ask one follow-up question, and that is to both of you. At this point, do FDA and CDC think it's more likely that tomatoes are the cause or jalapenos are the cause, or is it impossible to know which is more likely at this point?
Well, I think this starts with the case control studies, which, as I've said, clearly indicated an association, a strong association, with tomatoes. So there's every reason to believe, based on the epidemiology, that the first cases were linked to tomatoes. The point is that the cases have continued despite all the actions that have been put in place, the consumer advice, which raises the question whether now something else is responsible, which is most likely, and it is not tomatoes currently coming onto the market. Hence the focus on the peppers. There are certainly scenarios where we could have started with one type of produce and shifted to another if there was contamination in a packing shed or a washing station where two types of produce were going through. So it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that the contamination has moved from one type of produce to another. Rob, I don't know whether you want to add anything with regard to tomatoes.
Sure. Thanks, David. Yes, I think we've been considering this very actively in our current investigations and in review of our previous studies, and it's clear to us that tomatoes do not explain all of the clusters, do not explain all of the cases, and it's also clear to us that jalapenos by themselves, jalapeno peppers, also do not explain all the clusters or all the cases, and so we are seriously considering hypotheses or scenarios, as you say, that might involve more than one produce type.
Thanks, Dr. Pope. Next question, please.
Next we have Julie Schmidt with USA Today.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So, is it possible that, are you guys saying it's not possible that tomatoes were never implicated?
This is David Ashton. You had a bunch of negatives in there. I'm not quite sure. I sorted them out.
Is it possible that tomatoes just really were not any of this?
The science that we're working off of was the epidemiology, the case control study. And as we've said, there's a very clear association. We have not found Salmonella St. Paul in any of the testing that we've done of tomatoes or on the site. Now, it's impossible to prove a negative. So if we found a positive tomato, we'd have had assurance that, yeah, tomatoes were contaminated. The fact that we cannot prove that they were never contaminated is obviously going to remain with us forever. Is it remotely possible that tomatoes were not responsible? I mean, we can't say that's impossible. Sure. But the science at the beginning of this outbreak led us down the road to believe a strong association with tomatoes. And the case control studies, as I said, conducted by CDC, made that strong association. And FDA, whose primary role is to protect public health, acted on that information, which we have used many times. So epidemiological studies have been used repeatedly, absent a positive sample. So we stand behind that science that set us on the tomato track to begin with. The important thing is that it changes, it evolves, and we have to evolve with it.
Thanks. Next question, please.
Okay, next question comes from Lisa Stark with ABC News.
You somewhat answered it, because my question was how could it have been the tomatoes and now it's not the tomatoes. If in fact it's something other than tomato, if it's something was tomatoes and now it's something different, would that mean that it would have to be further down the food chain? In other words, the contamination wouldn't have occurred at the farm level, but further down the distribution chain?
I've pointed out that there's a variety of scenarios where they could both have become contaminated. You could take this right back to the farm. There was some speculation that maybe farmers grew tomatoes and then planted peppers. I think that's very unlikely. But the scenario that a large farm may have been growing tomatoes in one part of the farm and peppers in another part of the farm, and both were going either through a common contaminated washing station, packing station, or both were being irrigated with contaminated water, is not beyond the bounds of possibility. That's part of what getting down to the farm tells us. Is that going on, and is it possible? So far, we haven't had any strong evidence of that. But if we're in terms of speculation, you cannot rule out the farm as a source, even implicating more than one product.
Okay, thank you. Next question, please.
Sorry, this is Dr. Toks at CDC. I would just like to say that we agree that the information implicating tomatoes early in the outbreak was quite strong, and that we felt it was very likely to be the source. It is difficult to prove a negative, as Dr. Acheson just said, and it may well be that we will not ever be able to prove a negative. I think that we have been interested and concerned from the beginning that there are a lot of foods that are served together. They're served in food items that, like sauces and salsas, that involve several different food items that may be shipped together. They may be stored together in the kitchen, and they may, as Dr. Acheson mentioned, even be produced together. But joining of possible ingredients, even before they reach the final kitchen, is one of the concerns that we have.
Thank you, Dr. Tubbs. Next question, please.
Next question comes from Jim Downing from the Sacramento Bee.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Can you talk a bit about why the jalapeno and serrano warning is just for immune-compromised individuals rather than everybody?
Yeah, Rob, do you want to start off with that?
Sure, I'd be glad to. I think it is a reflection of the strength of the association, the certainty that we feel about the issue. At the beginning of the outbreak, when we had first information that associated illness with tomatoes, we did the same thing, and we said that was now restricted to New Mexico and Texas early on. We said that it was particularly of concern for those who are at greatest risk for severe illness, the very young, the elderly, and those with immunocompromise. And we've done that in the past with other risks, really trying to put a message out to protect those at greatest risk. And that was the path we went down with the jalapeno pepper as well.
Okay, so it's the bottom line, though, is that you're less confident now about jalapenos than you were back on June 7th about tomatoes.
And by June 7th, there was also beginning to be information about subtypes of tomatoes that allowed a more targeted and refined message as far as tomatoes of certain types or tomatoes from certain locations. And as far as I know, there's no information like that for the peppers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Next question comes from Lauren Neergard with the Associated Press.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I'm a little confused, actually, about the tomatoes and peppers link. Are you going back to the very beginning, to the New Mexico case control study, and saying, look, did we just miss peppers then, and it was that peppers and tomatoes were mixed?
I'll be glad to answer that one. This is Dr. Toks at CDC. We have not so far attempted to re-interview people who may have become ill at the end of April or at the beginning of May about what all they might have had in their kitchens or what they might have had to eat. We have not done that, or we're not doing that now. We are interviewing cases who have become ill more recently, whose memory might be fresher, to see if very detailed interviews in person might yield more information than what one might get from a questionnaire.
Okay, but that still doesn't really explain to me why the link. Why tomatoes then and peppers now?
Yes, it's actually two different kinds of information, and that's part of what's been complicated about this. Early in the outbreak, there were no clusters that had been reported, and we were talking to individuals about things that they had eaten before in the days before they became ill. often over the phone, not often in person. Later in the outbreak, when clusters became more common, when there were several large clusters reported, those clusters were investigated, and there the interview was about what one might have eaten at a particular restaurant on a particular evening, a much more crisp kind of information. The early case control study implicated or showed that there was a strong association with tomatoes. It was the more recent investigation of the clusters which particularly pointed to an association with jalapeno peppers. So it's kind of two different kinds of information obtained in two different ways at two different points in the outbreak.
I guess what I'm trying to get at is the biologic rationale for why there would be those two. I mean, you early on were saying, well, maybe they were, you know, one was grown in the field earlier and then something else was harvested, or maybe they mixed in a packing shed, and I don't hear you saying that today.
This is David Atchison. I am saying that. If the science led us down the track of saying strong association with tomatoes, now the science with different case control study is raising the question of jalapeno and serrano peppers. One question that's being raised is, well, was the case control study the first time around, was the jalapeno peppers buried in there somewhere that didn't surface? Hindsight is really good at trying to figure things out. At the time, that was the best information that we had. There are certainly scenarios whereby it could have been both, and that was the point I was trying to make. The scenarios at a farm level, the scenarios in a packing shed, in a washing station, whether it be on the farm or some subsequent place.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Atchison. Next question, please.
Next, we have Anna Shin with Washington Post.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I guess at this point you've probably done scores of tracebacks, maybe more. I'm wondering, in all your tracebacks, have you come across a distribution or packing shed where tomatoes and jalapenos, you know, cross paths, I guess, or were in the same place, maybe at different times?
This is David Atchison. The short answer is yes.
Okay.
Did you have a follow-up, Anna?
I have a follow-up that's sort of not related, which is, given that the produce folks have been saying that the tomatoes coming, the fields that were producing in April stopped producing a while ago, what is the reason for lifting it now as opposed to earlier?
Well, they may have been saying that, but certainly our investigations on the farms that we've been to have demonstrated that they were shipping, I think, well in towards the middle end of June. And if you consider that the shelf life of a tomato is 3 weeks, we're getting close to the point where we've now got confidence that they're no longer around.
Thank you. Next question, please.
Next question comes from Sally Schuck from Feedstuff.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. As this outbreak continues, it just appears that the science is extremely complex on these issues. What kind of confidence do you have that in the event of, using this as an example, in the event of intentional food poisoning outbreak, that you would be able to move any more quickly?
This is David Atchison. That's a really good question. And obviously, this outbreak has illustrated the point that there are areas that we need to focus on to make further improvements. As you know, the FDA has done a lot in terms of preventative controls, raising awareness about the importance of food defense, of dealing with or preventing deliberate attacks on the food supply. We're all aware that if somebody was really determined to do something, it would be very difficult to prevent it. And this does speak to the importance of response. And there's no question there are lessons to be learned from this of what can we do to improve traceability, amongst other things.
Thank you. Next question, please.
And next we have John Rockoff with the Baltimore Sun.
Hi, thanks. I was just wondering, if this is a case of cross-contamination, are there other previous examples where one item was first contaminated and then contaminated another, and so we had this long sort of outbreak like in this case?
This is David Atchison. I'm personally not aware of any, and my colleagues here are not either, just looking around the room. But bear in mind that this is not following the trail of a regular old produce outbreak, which usually follows the line of the shelf life of the product, and this is going way beyond typical fresh produce. So, there's something else going on here which is a little unusual, and so you need to think outside the box and ask that question.
And then just a quick question about that packer in Mexico. Is that, do they pack both jalapenos and serrano peppers, just jalapenos, just serranos?
Both.
Okay. Thank you.
Next question, please.
Next question comes from John Wilkerson with FDA Wheat.
Do peppers have a uniform growing season the way that tomatoes seem to have? In other words, will this possibly run its course and then peppers won't be being shipped any longer and then they'll also be cleared?
This is David Anderson. I'm not completely familiar with the growing season of peppers. We'll have to get back to you with an answer on that.
Yeah, we'll get back to you back on that. Did you have a follow-up?
Yes. Back when you were still testing the tomatoes, were you testing the meat of the tomatoes along with the surface or the skin of them, or just the outside?
It's David Ashton. It was predominantly the outside.
Okay. Thanks, John. Next question, please.
Next question comes from Elaine Walker with the Miami Herald.
Yeah, hi guys. As part of all of this, have you been able to absolve Florida and the Florida tomatoes? I see you're going down to Mexico and looking further down there, but have you ruled out that any of this outbreak ever came from Florida?
Let me repeat. We're dealing with two components to this. Is the tomato piece where the tracebacks based on the original epidemiological investigations indicated where tomatoes were most likely associated. That led us to Florida and to Mexico. We're now at the point where saying that tomatoes that may have come from Florida or Mexico are no longer in the system. Tomatoes that are currently on the market in the U.S. are safe to consume. The pepper investigation is running in parallel and is now essentially our focus. And the pepper traceback is what has taken us back to the firm in Mexico. So this is not saying that anybody was absolved. What we're saying right now is informing consumers that tomatoes that are currently in stores and coming onto the market, domestic and imported, are okay.
Thank you. Next question, please. Operator?
Yes, one moment.
Okay, thank you.
Next we have Chris Huntley with the St. Petersburg Times.
Hi, I just wanted to be clear on I'm clear on the warning currently is only regarding fresh serrano and jalapeno peppers. Would that include both the product itself and in any kind of salsa that you might eat? Or if you could clarify the exact warning you're giving currently.
You're correct. It is focused on the higher risk populations, and it is related to fresh products, and it would pertain to in whatever form that those fresh jalapeno and serrano peppers were being used.
Okay, so that could include any salsas, fresh salsas that would include them.
Yeah.
Okay. And also, can you give a time frame on when you expect an answer from the Mexican packing house that you're going to be visiting?
No.
No time frame.
Well, you know, we're down there. It's an ongoing investigation, and our investigators will follow leads down there as they appear. They arrived within the last 48 hours. They're out right now starting the investigation. It's really impossible to predict how long they'll be there or where that trail will take them.
Did that packing house also handle tomatoes earlier in the season?
That'll be determined by the investigators. Current sense is no, they didn't.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Greg, we'll take two more questions, please.
Next, we have Allison Aubrey with NPR.
My question was just asked. I was just trying to get a handle on what you may know about this packing facility, whether there's other things handled there other than the peppers.
Okay, thank you. Last question, please.
Our last question comes from, Joan Murphy with Produce News.
Yeah, I have a question. I mean, could the peppers have caused the entire outbreak? I mean, I understand what you're saying, that the science, the case control studies pointed to tomatoes in the beginning, but these were isolated cases. Now it's evolved to clusters where you have the opportunity to talk to people. I mean, could the peppers have caused the entire outbreak?
we're not in the business of speculating in terms of that. Clearly, many will, and we're just trying to follow the science, and that's what we've done.
Okay, I have a second question. Since you haven't observed the Florida, like let's say the southern Florida farms, what does this mean for tomato growers who have to make planting decisions for next year? What are you going to do for them? Are you going to be able to clear certain areas so they can plan and know that they can sell their product next year?
Well, with regard to Florida, we found no problems with the Florida farms.
Okay, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's media teleconference, and thanks for your participation. The replay will be available in about an hour and will be available for about 3 days. If you have any follow-up questions, please don't hesitate to call the respective agency. Please also check the FDA and CDC websites for updated information. And thank you and have a great day.
This is the conference coordinator. Thank you for attending today's conference. You may now disconnect.